Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
You're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.
When your child is small, you or someone you trust is with them all of the time to make sure they're safe, healthy, and usually fairly happy. As our kids grow, they spend more time away from the parental gaze, gaining more independence with each passing year. And modern technology has made it possible for parents to monitor their kids whenever they want to. You can check a child's location when they're walking to or from school. When they're old enough to drive, it's easy for anyone with a smartphone to check their child's location, and apps make it possible for you to even monitor their speed. These kinds of technologies can also follow young people as they head off to college or to independent living. But there are downsides. This hour, we'll talk about our surveillance society, the pros and cons, and how parents and teens or adult children can negotiate monitoring to find the balance between safety and independence. Later in the hour, I'll talk with Guy McHenry. He studies this kind of everyday surveillance technology at Creighton University, and University of Iowa communications expert Sylvia McCookie-Enyart. We also want to hear from you. Tell us about your experiences. Do you monitor your kids? How old are they? Have you negotiated this with them? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My first guest today has two adult children, one still in college, and she's been through these negotiations. Gabby DeWitt lives in Cedar Falls and works in public health. Hi, Gabby.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you for talking with me today. And your oldest child, your son, he is a college graduate who recently moved across the country to start a new job. Your daughter is in college. But these technologies, they've been around throughout your kids' teen years. So let's go back to when they were still living under your roof. How did you use technologies to keep track of them or to keep them safe when they were younger?
Well, I want to say Lucas was probably in ninth grade when he got his first, at least his first smartphone. And so if he had an app, he had to add me as a friend. Yeah, you know, so I wanted to see. I was more worried about him posting appropriate things. I wasn't really so much worried about tracking him with it, but posting appropriate things, not using it for bullying, not that I thought he would, but I just really wanted to see what he posted. They always had to charge their phones out in the kitchen at night. I didn't want them taking them to bed with them. And of course, that changed as they got older and started using their phones as alarm clocks. But I don't know. I was telling your producer, I don't know how I would do it in this day and age where kids, it feels like they grow up with a phone in their hand. You know, yeah. They were ninth grade before they ever had a phone. So, yeah. But now that he's across the country, we probably track him a little bit more than we did even when he was at Iowa at college.
Well, that is really interesting. So let's talk about the college years because, all right, so you were following your kids on social media, for example, which is a rule
yes,
in our household.
Although my son did, the workaround was that he would just send snaps direct to everyone except his mother. So I never saw what he was posting on Snapchat. So that didn't work. but yeah, that was the idea is that I would follow them on,
right.
on their social media.
All right. So how did you negotiate it when Lucas was in college?
Well, in college, same thing. I mean, we still followed the same things. It never really occurred to me to track him in college. And I actually didn't really want to know. They do have to be adults at some point. I saw one of the people on your Facebook thread said, you know, at some point we have to trust that we've raised them to be the people that we think they are. And that is something that that Lucas has told me before. You know, Mom, you raised me well. I'm not going to go get sloppy drunk. I'm not going to, you know, I'm okay. You have to trust that you raised me well. And that part of me didn't want to know, you know, if he was staying out too late, if he wasn't getting enough sleep, that sort of thing. So I had actually told my kids not to have their, like, locations on because I had seen things where, you know, people use it to lure young people or track them that way, or sometimes even for bullying for younger kids, like they would target kids if they saw that they were at a certain place. So I had suggested they not share their locations. But then when Lucas moved to grad school in Rhode Island, I was like, yeah, could you share your location? I just want to know you're okay.
So now tell me a little bit about that. It's kind of funny that now
that he's 22, I want to know where he is.
So, and was he okay with that when you asked him to do that?
He rolled his eyes, but he was okay. Yeah.
Why do you?
He doesn't know how often we look at it, but.
Why do you think it's more important to you now? Just once a day.
What's
okay.
That?
Why do you think it's more important to you now?
Well, because it's in a state we've never lived in. I mean, he's, I think we figured out 1,300 miles away. It's a different situation where we had to leave him without being in a permanent rental, where at Iowa, we would always move him into his place, whether it's a dorm or an apartment. But because of the way housing works in Rhode Island, they don't get in until September. But his job started on the campus in August, so he's kind of in an in-between spot in an Airbnb. And just all of those things just made us a little bit nervous for him. He's driving 30 minutes from where he's living to campus. Either way, you know, in the winter, that'll be a thing, too. And so, it gave us a little bit more peace of mind. We've never had them live out of the state before. And I already don't check it as much as I did the first week we left him there. So I think I'm getting better.
So that's more about you than it is about him or his safety, it sounds like.
It is. I think so. And, you know, even with my daughter, I was thinking about this, you know, she's a sophomore at UNI. And I can't rely on that, on tracking her for her safety, because she really needs to focus when she studies. So a lot of times she takes herself off of social media Monday through Friday. And so, I more rely, like, if I haven't heard from her in a day or two, I reach out to her. But tracking her that way, I think there is like a Find My iPhone app, and my husband could do that because he has an iPhone. I don't. But we can't, you know, we wouldn't be able to rely on, you know, tracking through a social media app, because a lot of times she disengages her social media.
Have you talked about that with her and just wanting to know what she's up to?
Yeah, no, I haven't, just because of her personality. Lucas was a lot more apt to be going out and be out and about and in places that maybe I wouldn't necessarily think that he would be. Emma's more of a homebody. She works, she goes home, and so it's not as much of an issue. So I think it really is kind of case by case for parents, case by case for their children, you know, and kind of just finding that middle ground that they're okay with, but you feel safe with. One of the other things I told the producers, I didn't feel bad about making them add me to all their social media when they were younger, because I was paying for their phones. When they purchased their own phones, I still pay for the plan, by the way, but when they purchased their own phones, it felt a little more like I couldn't really say, well, you need to add me to this, this, and this, you know, because it was their phone. They bought it.
Interesting. Well, Gabby, you have been through what a lot of parents are going through now and will go through in the future. So thank you so much for sharing your insight.
Yeah, thanks, Charity. It's a great idea for a show.
Gabby DeWitt lives in Cedar Falls. She works in public health, and she's got two adult children. This hour, we are talking about monitoring our kids. It's something that we seem to be doing more and more of. Some of these monitoring devices tend to follow kids to college or even into their adult life post-college or post-high school, and there are good parts about that. There are bad parts about that, and we're going to do quite a bit of exploring
next
this
hour.
With me is Guy McHendry. He's an associate professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. Guy, hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for being here. And I think a lot of us know at least a little bit about surveillance technology, but this field has grown so dramatically in recent years. I think about, you know, the baby monitor I bought when my kids were born was the kind that you'd get a little bit of static if you didn't have it in quite the right place. And it was just an audio monitor. And now, you know, there are video monitors and there are, you know, monitors you can embed in their mattresses and their cribs. And there are ways to monitor your children from birth on. So can you give me an idea of this burgeoning world of technology?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we see in surveillance technology is that often once a company kind of exhausts one market, they have to move to another. And so we see surveillance that was used for, like with drug testing, started with the military, moved to companies, and now you can go to Walgreens and buy a drug test off the shelf, and parents do that if they're concerned about drug use with their children. And so we see this kind of whole market or economy of surveillance technology that is advertised to parents. And as you mentioned, it really does start with the cradle. You know, the moment you bring that child home, there are companies vying for putting their technology on your kid in the form of a smart onesie or in the crib with a smart mattress pad so that you can kind of always be aware and always be monitoring them.
Well, and of course, as your child grows, there are ways to continue to track your child later on as well. And of course, that focuses mostly on location. But, you know, we're talking about smartphones, which most kids don't get until they're a little bit older. But There are smart watches and things like that. I mean, I could track an elementary school child's location if that was something that felt important to me, right?
Yeah, we're starting to see the growth of smartwatches marketed directly for kids. And of course, they have kid-friendly designs, but they're really being sold to parents who have kind of this concern and want to know about location. Parents have started kind of adapting Apple's new AirTag technology to put them in watch bands or in their kids' backpacks, those kinds of things. And what it effectively does is kind of create this ability for parents to be monitoring the location of their children at all times, even without the aid of a smartphone.
I'm Charity Nebbe. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back to the conversation in a moment. You're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
Can we heal the environment? In Kansas, we're working on it. Up From Dust is a podcast about how humans reshaped the world to fit urban landscapes and agricultural needs. We'll meet the people who are rolling up their sleeves to find more sustainable ways forward. Listen to Up From Dust from KCUR, part of the NPR network.
I'm Charity Nebbe, and this is an archive edition of Talk of Iowa. This hour, we're talking about how technology has given us new kinds of access to our children through smartphones, through apps, through GPS devices. We can monitor our children in ways that our parents never could have dreamed of. And parents use these tools to keep their children safe, to make sure that their children are where they say that they are. They also sometimes use these technologies to follow their children to college after they turn 18 or follow them into the adult world. This hour, we're talking about the positives, the negatives, the boundaries, the crossed boundaries, growing independence. With me is Guy McHenry. He is an associate professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Creighton University in Omaha. And Guy, just before the break, we were talking about how, you know, we can now tag our younger kids. So if they're walking to or from school, we can make sure that they're going to school or getting to school on time, or yes, they're on their way home and we don't need to worry. Let's move up into a little bit older age group and talk about smartphone technology, because even if you just are all on the same plan, it's easy to use, if you have an iPhone, for example, to find my iPhone and know where your kid is. But you can also get apps that help you learn a lot about where your kid is and what they're doing, right?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things we see is that lots of apps that track location or monitor social media feeds. You can even get routers that have kind of software pre-programmed in them that will limit or restrict what your child can search for. Many of these companies kind of market to parents the idea that they should be worried or concerned or afraid about what their child's doing or that their activities. And so you start to see parents really get lots of anxiety from this and start to kind of slowly add these features, add these apps to their kids' phones so they can kind of be hyper aware about what their children are doing.
Well, and I asked people on Twitter and on Facebook to give me some feedback about how they're using these apps and specifically focusing on college students. And one of the responses I got on Twitter was, every parent tracks. I bet you know the whole town that your kid lives in, you know, lives in now. You're looking at them being at a certain restaurant and thinking, does it take 3 hours to get a pizza? You know, things like that. And that's an interesting take on it. If we think everybody's doing it, that makes it okay?
Well, I'm not so sure about that. But because I think many parents will say that, you know, when their kid makes a mistake, the everybody's doing it defense doesn't hold up.
Right.
But even so, we all are under some form of surveillance one way or another, from our smartphone to, you know, CCTV cameras all over. But that kind of everyone experiences surveillance doesn't mean we all experience it in the same way. So even if the vast majority of parents conduct some kind of surveillance of their child, that doesn't mean they're all doing it the same way. And it doesn't excuse or kind of justify what might be kind of some of the more heavy-handed uses of that technology. And so I start to worry when we just say, you know, this is a fact of life, and so therefore it's okay.
Now, you teach a class about surveillance technology, and I know we could dive really deep into a lot of different kinds of surveillance
sure.
technology, but you also ask your students about this. You ask them if their parents track them via their smartphones. What kind of responses do you get?
Most are now well acclimated. You know, they know their parents did it. They've experienced it. I always get concerned, like I'll ask for a show of hands and the people who don't raise their hand, you know, in the back of my brain, I wonder, like, do their parents really not do it or do they just not know about it, right? One of the things that always makes for an interesting discussion is asking them, okay, they did that when you were in high school. Are they still doing it now that you're in college?
And what do
often
they say?
Yes.
I'm curious too, and we'll talk more about this in a moment when we bring our next expert on it. But do these kids talk about having conversations with their parents about it, or is it something that they just don't talk about?
You know, I think they often treat it as kind of a fact of that's what parents do, and as the first guest mentioned, a lot of times it's kind of this coercive idea of, well, mom and dad are paying for the phone, therefore they get whatever access to it. And I certainly think that parents can set some expectations, especially when they're paying for the service and the device, just like they can set rules at home because they're the one providing room and shelter. But also, we need to be teaching our kids to understand and respect privacy and to have a healthy idea of what privacy means so that they can form kind of healthy adult relationships in the future. And so if we don't let them develop some degree of their own private life, then that can be kind of really dangerous in terms of how they think of privacy in the future.
Yeah, I had a response from a college student on Twitter named Aiden. He says, sometimes my parents check my location when I go out with friends. It's annoying when I come home and then they list off the places that I have been. And I asked him if he'd talked to them about it. He said, I've mentioned it to them. They say that they check my location if I'm not home when they expect me to be. If I didn't share my location, they would probably text or call to ask where I am, which would annoy both them and me. But you also, you don't have to spend very long online, for example, on Reddit, to read some really frightening stories about how parents can use this in a very controlling way. Again, because they pay for tuition, because they pay for the phones, they can sometimes use this kind of technology to try to control their adult child's behavior.
Right. And, you know, when having these conversations, when negotiating this between parents and children, and especially adult kids, you know, my students are adults. It's really important that they have the ability to kind of meaningfully consent to what is happening. And that involves kind of a freely given choice. And so if parents say you either do this or we don't help you with tuition and we cut off all financial support, in effect, right, that student has no choice. And so I start to get concerned there. And we, you know, one of the related things we see that worries me is lots of this surveillance technology being used in relationships, romantic relationships, to engage in some of that same kind of controlling behavior, the kind of dark stuff that you found on Reddit that parents are doing. And so if parents teach children that this is an okay power dynamic in relationship, that then bleeds into kind of their later friendships and romantic relationships.
Interesting thought. Well, we are talking about using technology to monitor our kids, younger kids, adult kids as well. You're welcome to join the conversation. We'd love to hear about your experiences, conversations you've had, experiences that your kids have had. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Mary Beth is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hello, Mary Beth.
Hi there.
And you have sort of the opposite experience as the person being tracked. Tell me about that.
I do. Well, I was widowed a few years ago, and so I was living by myself for the first time, and my young adult kids and I talked about having kind of a tracking device because I did a lot of hiking and I'd go for bike rides and I'd be by myself. And so they liked the idea, and so did I at the time, of knowing where their mom was at, you know, in case there'd be any trouble. Mm-hmm. And we did that for maybe like 3 months. And then I found that I really didn't like it. There was nothing I was doing that was at all, you know, problematic, but I didn't like the sense that all my movements were tracked. And so we talked about it and we got rid of the app and that. So while I can really understand tracking a young child walking to school, that kind of thing, boy, with college age young adults, I just feel like it's not appropriate. It doesn't foster independence and autonomy. you know, an agency of a young adult.
Oh, that is a really interesting viewpoint and also adds some empathy to the conversation from the adult perspective. Mary Beth, thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And I want to bring our next expert into the conversation as well. Guy McHenry is staying with us, associate professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Creighton University. And now Sylvia McCookie-Enyart is here, associate professor of communication at the University of Iowa. Hello, Sylvia. Sylvia, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, wonderful. You know? Now I can hear you.
So, okay, good.
Sylvia, I want to start with talking about parenting and how that has changed over time. I was talking to Guy about how the technologies have changed over time, but also our behaviors and expectations as parents has changed a lot from generation to generation. What are you seeing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we see now this trend of this helicopter parenting, right? And it was definitely reflected in surveilling our children, but really a more kind of shift to centering the child in the family as kind of, you know, the adult's lives and, you know, revolving around the child now. And there's some great shifts, right? That we have more kind of positive parenting approaches where we're, you know, raising emotionally intelligent children, talking, you know, about feelings, talking through things versus, you know, spanking and stuff like that. So there's definitely some good shifts. But then we do get a little extreme of just, you know, really making sure that we're not, you know, just kind of always there. You know, we're not necessarily just being a safety net, but preventing them from having falls, you know, at all these days. And so it does really take away the ability independent choices, have agency in your life, and kind of learn through trial and error when we have parents just so actively involved. And as you know, we see too then in college students and young adults' lives as well. And so we've definitely seen this shift that some things are good and other things are get into some tricky and kind of sticky territory.
Well, and we were talking earlier about the technology that we can use to track kids in elementary school. And of course, sending them out the door to walk to school, that can be a little anxiety producing. But it's also something kids have done for decades. And it's also that little taste of freedom that maybe a fourth grader or a fifth grader can get when they can maybe stop at the park on the way home or visit with a friend, that kind of thing. How do you feel about tracking kids in situations like that, Sylvia?
Yeah, I think one of the big things, you know, I do think it differs by age group and then kind of what the goal or the motivation for the tracking is. I think if it's something like having your location on, yes, when you're starting to walk to school for the first time, or maybe you're driving and using it as like a, if there was trouble, I'll know where you're at kind of thing, you know, so not using it to necessarily track your movements. Or things like that. That's one thing. I do think we start getting into different territory when we're rattling off lists, you know, of where our kids have been or saying, well, you know, you shouldn't be at this, you know, yeah, you're walking home and you stopped at the park and now, you know, I'm texting and I'm panicked and all of this stuff. And so I think, yes, with younger kids, just kind of as a, you know, safety net there, you know, for instance, my husband, you know, goes on long bike rides and stuff and he'll share his location before a ride just in case, you know, he gets a flat tire or something happens, I would know where to go to, you know, help him. But using it when we're just really trying to track every movement, I think that's a really different story than just kind of having it as a backup plan in the event something happened.
And I do remember times when I was growing up where my parents would forget to pick me up, for example, and I would wait and wait and wait, and the school was locked, and I couldn't go in and use the phone that was attached to the wall on a cord, you know, things like that. So, you know, having that phone, having that device, and the ability for my kids to communicate with me gives me a lot of sense of safety and security in case I screw up. But I know that it also gives them that sense of safety and security. I'm wondering if there's a shift when the phone is doing it automatically, you know, like after when my son gets picked up from a carpool, he's supposed to text me to let me know that he's been picked up and he's on his way home. And most of the time he remembers to do that. But if I set something up that automatically does that for him, does that change the dynamic of what's happening, in your opinion, Sylvia?
Well, yeah. And I think it really prevents children from learning kind of responsibility and accountability, and kind of takes away that need, to communicate with somebody when, you just get a little alert on your phone that, so-and-so has walked in the front door at home. And so I think kind of setting up expectations, of what I expect for communication, I need you to text me when you get home or text me when you get to your friend's house or whatever, is a good behavior to, set up and kind of have that in place. And if we kind of make that automated, it just takes a little bit of that kind of personal responsibility away. Just as like, you have to teach your kids, you have to pack your school supplies in your bag. I can't do it for you every day and those types of things. So I think this is one way that it does kind of take away having to be responsible.
Now, when a child turns 18, when they go off to college or they get their first adult job and move into an apartment or something like that, a lot of these technologies are just carrying over and conversations aren't necessarily happening about that. And the parents that responded to my Facebook questions, I had a lot of people say, I didn't ever really talk to my college student about that. We've just continued doing it. What are your thoughts on that, Sylvia?
Yeah, I think once we get into the college students, post-college, young adults, that it gets very tricky and kind of, I think, can be, damaging to the relationship in the long run if we're not having these conversations. For some, families, and I, some of my students as well, they've shared that, their families all share their, all members share location all the time. So for some families, it is just kind of part of the culture of their family, and they don't really seem to think too much of it, but they've had these conversations with them that they're okay with it. I think when we're not having these conversations, renegotiating these kind of privacy boundaries, we're implicitly kind of suggesting that maybe we don't trust our child, or we're kind of admitting that, we know we shouldn't be doing this, but since no one said anything, I'm just going to keep on doing it. And I don't think that's, healthy for that parent-child dynamic.
This is an encore edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Heal the environment? In Kansas, we're working on it. Up From Dust is a podcast about how humans reshaped the world to fit urban landscapes and agricultural needs. We'll meet the people who are rolling up their sleeves to find more sustainable ways forward. Listen to Up From Dust from KCUR, part of the NPR network.
I'm Charity Nebbe. This is an encore edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Smartphones and other kinds of technology have given us the opportunity to keep track of our kids in ways that our parents could never have dreamed of. There are upsides to this technology, and there are some downsides. And there's an interesting gray area. When children turn 18 and become adults or even graduate from college, how do you feel about tracking adults with this technology? We'd love to hear your thoughts. We'd love to hear your experiences. 866-780-9100. We're going to talk a little bit more about how to negotiate these relationships as well, but we have a lot of people who want to share their experiences, so we'll get to the phones. With me, Sylvia McCookie-Enyart. She's an associate professor of communication at the University of Iowa, and Guy McHenry, associate professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Creighton University. And Lynn is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Lynn. Lynn, are you there?
Good morning.
Hi, what's your story?
Yeah. So our family uses Life 360, and we're just getting used to it. And I was in a car accident on Saturday, and unbeknownst to me, a feature of Life 360 notified my two kids that I was in a car accident. So they got text messages saying, you may want to check on Lynn because we have gotten notice that her phone has flown in the car or rapid movement or whatever. And so in kind of unfortunately, they got that text before I could get to them, although I was absolutely fine. So it was kind of the reverse. My kids learned about me before I learned about my kids. But it also gave me so much comfort in that if my kids are in a car accident, I will also get a text message letting me know something, you know, has happened to that phone movement. Beyond that, after the accident, my phone kept buzzing and Life 360 was asking me, are you okay? Are you okay? So beyond Life 360, the features were really amazing to me on Saturday with this car accident.
Well, I'm so glad you are okay, Lynn, and sorry that you went through that experience. But I can imagine that that was terrifying for your kids. Do you like that feature?
My daughter's sending me this text. What's going on? Are you okay? And so it was a surprise to me because I'm still kind of new to all these apps and technology, and we don't have drivers yet. So that is coming. But I did think, wow, that is going to be really interesting when my kids are driving if that happens and I get that text. So it was kind of, like I said, it was kind of the opposite of what the purpose of that was originally, is just to kind of see where my kids are if I need to find them.
Yeah, interesting.
So I am totally fine. And I have to say, I thought it was an amazing feature. And it would have been extremely useful had I been in some remote area and no witnesses. You know, I had witnesses that stopped. But if I had been in some remote area and had been in this accident, it would have been really beneficial having all of that communication available.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much for calling and sharing that. And I mean, Guy, that's exactly why a lot of people have these technologies. I mean, I've got a 16-year-old at home, and I think about, what if she gets into an accident and is unconscious in a ditch? If I can find her, even on Find My Friends, I can find her. What are your thoughts about this technology and maybe downsides? I mean, I can see a sure. lot of upsides there, although scared kids is a downside, feels like. But what do you think?
Well, I think a couple of things are important. One is that these notifications going out was a surprise, right? And so, like, you know, she was not prepared for her kids to get these text messages. And a lot of these things that we bring into our life, we don't really know all of their complex features and abilities. And so it makes it harder and harder for us to set boundaries and kind of control exactly what we want to happen. And then the other potential downside that I think we need to think a lot about is, how safe are these systems? It might be potentially reassuring for you to know where a child is at all times. But if the company you're using doesn't care about your privacy, or if your passwords are compromised, or if you just use really bad passwords, there's the potential for folks to gain access and exploit this in ways that can harm you or your family as well.
And we have this message from Carol. She says, I'm listening to your show. I'm a little surprised that parents of college-aged children are still tracking their children's movement. My children are all grown and through college, but I wouldn't have had any interest in tracking or monitoring their activities when they were in college. I felt responsible for monitoring where they were in high school and who they were with, and I found it exhausting at times. When they went off to college, I felt a certain sense of freedom and enjoyed the change. They were on their own, and so was I. Everybody needs some autonomy. And Sylvia, I want to talk about that, because this didn't used to be an option. So we all had that autonomy. You know, yeah, maybe you'd check in with your folks a couple of times a week on the telephone. Once upon a time, people actually wrote letters home. But now that it's an option, I think a lot of people are defaulting to it. What is your feeling about, you know, that response that so many people who didn't have access to this technology have of, oh my gosh, no, why would you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, you know, just an interesting shift that this has become kind of like the default, and especially from folks who, yeah, we didn't have this growing up. You know, in college, yeah, there was phone calls, and that was about it. And so I think, though, like I said, you know, if you feel that kind of everyone is doing it, then perhaps you should be too, or companies marketing and kind of exploiting natural parental anxiety And I think, though, you know, even the car accident example, though, shows that I think that could even produce more anxiety. So we have these apps, we do this tracking because we tell ourselves it's going to make me feel better, you know, to know where they're at, you know, all the time. But then you get these notifications, you know, and that can produce more anxiety because then what if I get this alert, I text you and there's no answer and kind of how that can fuel that. Or then I feel helpless because I can't do anything. Or like the parent in the post just said, you know, it's also exhausting, right? Tracking someone's movements all day, every day. And that's not really parenting exactly, right? That's just kind of being someone's, you know, kind of keeper with that, but not really doing the job of parenting, which is hopefully doing enough guidance, you know, that we're going to trust our kids to make the right decisions, make the right choices, and give them their privacy to kind of live their lives.
Well, and I wonder about if a child, and obviously I'm using that loosely, if an adult who is someone's child is being tracked and knows that they're being tracked, I can imagine that that could lead them to take more risks. Like if I'm going to a party that I don't think my parents would approve of, or if I'm going to be in a location where I don't think they'd like to see me, I might just leave my phone at home.
Right, exactly. I mean, these, you know, adult children are going to know how to, you know, kind of, you know, push against the system or just kind of, you know, deactivate features or put their phone, you know, I was just talking to, you know, some folks about this and everything. Yeah, you can just put your phone, you know, in airplane mode, you know, and they know kind of hacks to get around this. And I think, yeah, like you don't want to feel that your parents in the room with you when you're out. And I think it has, you know, there's a lot of privacy concerns, not just for the adult child that should be allowed to have privacy, right? And be able to go to places and not have a detailed, you know, list typed up when they get home or talk to their parent next. But what about the privacy of folks that they're with? You know, we're not, like when I'm hanging out with friends or, you know, when college students are, you're not necessarily consenting to having someone else know where you're at. And so I think we get into some sticky territory about privacy in our other relationships. And like I was saying earlier as well, like how does this affect our future relationships? Because when does this stop then, you know, for parents? And what if I don't want, you know, my romantic partner's parents knowing what we're doing all the time or where we're at, or they, you know, text and say, oh, I see you're at this restaurant, you know, have this for dinner off the menu or something. You know, we're starting to really overreach, and you can see how that can kind of start impacting other relationships in that adult child's life too. So I think a lot of unintended consequences can really happen from this.
Well, and there have been some very high profile cases of young people getting abducted or murdered that I think we need to talk about. I mean, Molly Tippett's, Breasia Terrell, and, you know, parents are scared that something like that could happen to their child. And they think, well, maybe, just maybe, if I have this tracking technology, I could prevent something like that from happening. Or at least when law enforcement gets involved, I can say this is where, you know, this is the last place where my child was, and I can show them that. I mean, Sylvia, there's definitely a possible benefit to that. Why wouldn't that be a good reason?
Yeah, and I, you know, as a parent myself, I totally understand, you know, that anxiety that we often, our minds go to that kind of improbable place. Obviously, it's possible, but improbable that these really awful events do happen. And so, yeah, of course, there could be that, you know, benefit of it on the off chance something like that happens. But I do think it is kind of just harmful to our overall mental health and well-being to really be living and kind of operating out of fear and anxiety and just kind of waiting for that shoe to drop and just kind of the toll that takes. You know, like that parent said, it's exhausting. And like, you can't say for sure, right, that surveillance would have prevented some of these, you know, instances. But like you said, you know, then you would have this location of where the person was last. So, I mean, yeah, in the off chance those things happen, there could be a benefit to this. But I think kind of on the day-to-day and kind of the toll it takes on everyone, even if they are not really thinking about it, just this undercurrent of anxiety running, if you're constantly checking your phone, being, you know, producing more anxiety of like, well, I haven't gotten an alert or they haven't texted and I see that they're here or there and stuff. So I sometimes I think, you know, the damages of this kind of outweigh the potential benefits to especially, you know, prevent something, you know, really horrible and improbable from happening.
Let's go back to the phones. Nicole is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. So I got the Life 360 app as well for my best friend. She's just nosy, I guess, and anxious, and she likes to know where I'm at. We're both true crime enthusiasts, and just it's kind of a comforting thing to have in your back pocket. But, like, I also added my mom on there, but I'm a fully grown adult. I'm almost 30, and it works for us, but I would have never added my mom to an app like that when I was first starting college or anything. And so I think sharing that location with my friends and my family, knowing that my best friend has that information, so if they are concerned, they can reach out to her. And it's been useful a few times where my phone's died while I've been traveling, and she was like, oh, I know where she is. Everything's fine.
Oh, interesting.
And then everybody was able to kind of be fine.
So at what point in your life do you think you would have been okay with this kind of, you said you wouldn't have been okay with it in college. When do you think that it felt like time that it would be okay?
I think it was based on my relationship with my parents. I had a rough adolescence and was pretty ready to be free and on my own when I went to college initially. And just through emotional communication and emotionally intelligent communication, we were able to repair our relationship. And then I felt like it wasn't smothering me. I just understood my mother's anxieties and could, like, be compassionate towards that and be more comfortable.
Interesting. Nicole, thank you so much for sharing that. And Sylvia, that brings us to, I think, an important part of this. And we're nearly out of time. There's so much to talk about. But let's talk about negotiating these terms, because when a child turns 18, they are technically an adult. You may be paying their tuition or you may be paying their cell phone plan, but they are an adult. How do you think parents should approach having a negotiation about this kind of monitoring?
Yeah, I think we definitely need to have a negotiation about it, openly communicate about this, and obtain the consent, you know, from that adult child. I don't think there should be any kind of covert, you know, operation going on. I think, you know, parents can say, hey, you know, you're going off to school. I'm a little anxious about this. I'd like to, you know, have some kind of way to be able to know where you're at or, you know, track your location or whatever that is. But then I think parents and adult children need to, I mean, if the child says no, you know, then I think the parent has to respect that and then come up with a different plan. Okay, can you text me at least once a day, you know, or when you get home for the day so I know you're safe? So coming up with some kind of alternative, or then negotiating what they are or aren't comfortable using and how often, and making an agreement, you know, what's going to be done with this information? How often am I going to check it? Am I allowed to kind of comment on where you've been, you know? And I think just having to be really explicit, you know, is it just so I know you're safe, or in the event something happens, I could see where your location was, or is it something, you know, where I'm going to kind of be, you know, monitoring your behavior? And that's something really different. But I think, you know, having a mutually negotiated kind of contract of what is or isn't acceptable use of whatever technology is really important.
I can imagine a lot of students having a hard time saying, hey, I don't want you to monitor me. That's an emotionally loaded thing to say, Sylvia.
Yeah, I mean, it can be, right? But let's hope. I mean, for some families, it might not be. Families that have really fostered open communication with their children, allow their children's opinions, you know, and voices to be heard, because that's what we want, right? Children that are going to have kind of independent thoughts. And so hopefully they have done that. I think, you know, it does get really coercive when it is kind of the holding over their head, well, I pay for the phone or I pay for the plan. And so you're right. I do think for some adult children, even though they're adults, it's going to be hard to say no to their parents, because maybe that's not something that they've kind of been, you know, taught that they're allowed to do. So yeah, then I think parents, you know, have to kind of really reflect on why they want to use this, what they're doing this for, and seeing, you know, does that really outweigh any kind of potential discomfort or potential damage to the parent-child relationship, perhaps, by doing this.
And we only have about 30 seconds left. Guy, I'd love to hear your thought. This technology is not going away. What do people need to know about it?
So I think we would do better rather than trying to use this technology covertly to trace and track our kids, to teach them about the benefits and risks and really engage them in that conversation from a young age so they can grow up having the tools they need to exercise their privacy and take control of this technology.
And hopefully more and more people will do that. Guy, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Guy McHenry, Associate Professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. Sylvia McCookie-Enyart, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Sylvia McCookie-Enyart is an Associate Professor of Communication at the University of Iowa. And thank you to everyone who shared their stories and their experiences this hour.
This is an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Thanks for listening.